Welcome to Continued Success on another beautiful, simmering May Friday. The sidewalks are sizzling, the ceiling fans are spinning, and Mickey Moniak's hand is on its way to giving you a thumbs up. I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz.
Greetings, Justin.
A fun time in Philadelphia, I assume, happened against the Padres.
Is fun the word? Is that the word you'd use?
It's not. Phillies, you know, we did our last episode of Continued Success, and basically the entire through line was me trying to talk myself into being excited that the Phillies had won a four-game series in Los Angeles against the best team in the National League. But the fourth game of the series saw them lose frustratingly and seemingly inevitably due to a bullpen collapse. And that really just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. It just, you know, the bad vibes coming off that loss kind of made the enjoyment of the series win a little harder. And I think you pretty much were on the same page there. But still, series win's a series win. The Phillies were coming back to Philadelphia to play some West Coast teams, not on the West Coast. The Padres came in first for three games. And Liz, you know, I tallied it up. The Phillies scored 33 runs in four games against the Dodgers and three runs against the Padres. They had 20, this blew my mind, 20 extra base hits in four games against the Dodgers. 20 extra base hits. They had three in three games against the Padres.
They used them all up.
Eight home runs.
Their lunch money on Monday.
Eight home runs against the Dodgers. One, a Rhys Hoskins home run. Against the Padres. I mean, Liz, you know, we could go on. Their batting average against San Diego was under 200. Their batting average against the Dodgers was 300. You go on and on and on. You know, these stats are available for everyone to look up, and I don't encourage you to do that. We all kind of got the gist of it, I feel like. And once more, we're just kind of reminded that this team can win and this team can lose, and those things seem to happen equivocally with each other. And no better way to put a point on that than consulting John Foley, a Phillies Twitter follow that I'm sure everyone is listening to this is already following. But he put it out there today that the Phillies are 10-10 in their last 20 games. 20. Oh no, this is going to get worse. 25-25 in their last 50 games, and yes, 100-100 in their last 200 games.
No. That can't be. Are you serious? That's true?
I didn't say it was true, but I have no reason not to think that it's true. It came from John. He's typically a reliable source. Does it not feel true?
It feels really true.
I found it instantly believable. I don't know why you would struggle with that.
So much money to get the same team 3 years in a row.
Oh, now the money matters? Didn't matter before?
I don't give a shit about the money, but they're spending it trying to make the team better, and the team is just staying put. Like,
what is this? What is this, though, really? I mean, like, at this point, we've had four. I mean, this team is lingering at 500. We know that 500 is defined the last three seasons preceding this. There have been different players here, some of the same, but also different players have rotated in and out, and the team is still at 500. So what's it going to take? What's the difference maker? Because if you had told me NL MVP Bryce Harper and the core that he's grown accustomed to playing with here in Philadelphia would be joined by Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber, I would think that should do it. That ought to do it. It's not overkill, but it's more than I think any of us thought the Phillies were going to do. It was a pleasant surprise when they went over the luxury tax by signing Nick Castellanos. But I would have guessed, you know, that ought to do it. And I'm not saying like fix everything, but at least get you out of that 500 rut. That ought to do it. And it hasn't. And
just,
here we are.
It's really incredible. I don't even really, I'm still trying to, like, there isn't anything to add.
It's not a cultural thing, right? I mean, like, they could be cultural problems, but, like, being exactly 500.
Yeah.
Like exactly 500 doesn't change because you put a dartboard in the clubhouse or something, you know, like this. I don't know what, how do you fix that? Like you need some kind of charge. Like you saw the Phillies' faces after the loss, the second loss in the Padres game in the finale. Where they were shut out again by a very small number of runs. They lost 2-0 and they lost game 1-3-0. These are not the ways that this team should lose. If this team's going to lose, you kind of, you know, again, going into the season, think it's going to be more like the way they lost in game 4 of the Dodgers series. They score some runs, bullpen blows it because they didn't score quite enough runs, but they're coming off 3 games in a row where they scored a record number of runs at Dodger Stadium. That's the kind of way you expected this team to lose. You don't expect them to lose twice in the same series because they couldn't score any runs. And I'm not saying, like, the Padres pitching staff is good. Obviously, the Phillies had to face Yu Darvish. They had to face Blake Snell, but he didn't look very good at all. And they actually managed to get some base runners and score some runs off him and actually win that game. And I forget who they faced in game 1. Was it Musgrove? I can't remember.
No.
Point is, the Padres have a deep rotation, so, you know, that maybe plays a role, but at the same time, this team's not supposed to not score any runs, and then you saw their faces at the end of the game. They're all, they just look like, there's just not, there's, the vibes are bad. I guess you just go with that.
Bad.
The vibes are bad. They aren't, you know, they're demoralized by this, and I don't, what's that, what the hell's, what's to be done?
I mean,
what
the All-Star break is real far away, guys.
I mean, they're just like looking at the ground. They're just, you know, that's bummed out and just sweating and burned out. And you're just like, God damn it. What the hell? It's May. It's not even Memorial Day. How have we reached this point?
I don't know. Like at this point, looking at all of this, it's unnatural. Someone or something has cursed us. I think this is time. Like, how does this happen? It's one of the greatest, like, symmetrical periods of time in baseball. Like, for them to have been, like, exactly 500. Like, that's really the problem. It's not like they're a little bit low or a little bit high. Like, they are absolutely middle. Straight down the middle. And when you look at this team, like, what do you fix? I mean, the bullpen has problems, and they could fix that, certainly, but that doesn't necessarily help some of the losses we saw in the Padres series. Like, what do you... I mean, spending more money, getting a reliever, but again, the trade deadline is far away, and that's when the big deals typically get done.
Nobody's making any trades before Memorial Day, at least.
No. No.
Everyone's still figuring out what they got.
Exactly. They're not doing that. But, like, so this is what we have. The team that we have, the team that they have there is all they have until we get further into the season. And it's hard to, I mean, I do kind of blame them, if I'm being honest, for it. Like, I was going to say, it's hard to blame them for feeling dejected, but I do blame them because they had chances.
They did yesterday. Have chances.
They were base runners in multiple innings. I had the game on. I was watching it while I worked. And every time someone would get on base, there was a runner on second at one point. And nothing. There's just, the inning would just end. Like, you know, like a weak trumpet, like an accidental trumpet blow in band. Like,
I kept thinking of George Sr. in Arrested Development when Buster asks him why he never came to his soccer games, and he's like, you're just a turd out there. you're just a turd.
Want to talk about Arrested Development? We could talk about that.
I thought about that quote a lot during the series. speaking of who they've got, they don't got Bryce Harper.
Yep.
Because he got a PRP injection for his elbow troubles and is now out of the lineup after being in one of the hottest stretches of hitting he's had. You know, he's coming off being the National League Player of the Week, and the Phillies decide, enough of that. Let's stick a needle in that arm and have him miss some games. And as our own John Stolness said, I'm just not sure I see what the hurry was to get Harper the PRP injection. Maybe wait until he hits a slump or something. What's the rush to get him back in the outfield? I'm not worried, but he was so dang hot. And that's the issue. I mean, if he was willing to keep playing and it wasn't a dire need, like if a medical professional was like, look, this could lead to worse things if we don't deal with it now, so we're going to start addressing this now. Okay, I mean, that's, you know, unfortunate, but it's got to happen.
I mean, that's like, what I assume.
You can't turn that down.
That's what I assume it is. Like, you get the injection, and that is what helps you recover in time. That is what helps you. Like, after that great week, I don't think he's the one that said, hey, my elbow hurts a lot still. I don't think I can be in the lineup. I don't think Bryce Harper would do that. I just don't.
Yeah.
This was not his choice, I'm assuming. But, you know, as a Major League Baseball player or anyone else in professional athletics, you know, when the team tells you to do something, you don't really have a choice. You do it because it's what's best.
I'm going to assume it's just unfortunate, but it's also, you know, if it came out that like, yeah, the Phillies just decided to, I don't know, that just, I wouldn't be surprised either.
That's
just
absolutely aligns, not. I'm assuming that they're
the
competent.
Goofy shit they do. Yeah.
I'm just assuming they're competent at what they do. And so I'm absolutely expecting to be proven wrong at some point.
Well, a guy named Joe Andre on Twitter, I believe he's been updating this list as the games have gone by, but he's been doing a lot of rankings involving the teams in Major League Baseball who have the highest payrolls. And, you know, typically this isn't something I use as a barometer, but it is really funny to see the contrast of like how high up on the list the Phillies are in payroll. They are fourth behind the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees. You know, those are the very expensive teams in baseball.
And they're all doing well this season.
And what Joe did was pair them with how many games they have been held to one run or less in the 2022 season. The Dodgers, baseball's priciest team, have been held to one run or less four times. The Mets, the second most expensive team, only twice. The Yankees, five times. The Phillies, have you seen this stat?
I have seen this stat. Do you know what I'm going to say?
10 times they have been held to one run or less. This isn't just our imagination. This is a team that is still underperforming. And we can point out the contrast between that and the amount of money, like the most expensive Phillies team of all time. But it's also just, you know, thinking about who's on this team. They're not supposed to suck in this way. This is not how they're supposed to suck. It's not. I know that there was a version of this list where he didn't have them ranked by how expensive their rosters were. It was just like teams that have been held to one run or less. And there was a point a day or two ago where the Phillies were tied with the Nationals and Reds for how many times they'd been held to that little runs. And I believe with 10, the last time I saw it, the Reds and Nationals had 9 games where they were held to one run or less. So the Phillies might have more than them at this point. And those aren't teams that are even trying to win.
Wow.
So I don't know what the force of nature is. I don't know what's at play
or
here
curse.
Because it's absurd.
It is
and it's
absolutely absurd and frustrating because the Phillies have in theory done exactly what they needed to do. They signed an extra hitter this year. They have the MVP and the Cy Young winner. They're ready to go. You know, they've acquired the extra pieces. Like, almost every name in the lineup is a name that you actually know, wider than just the Phillies. Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, Harper, Hoskins. Like, they've done what they needed to do pretty much almost everywhere. I think the bullpen definitely needs some attention. But they've done...
When doesn't it?
When doesn't it? I mean, what else do we do? What else do they do? I mean, it's... I'm just assuming that Ben Franklin somehow cursed this city. That's my assumption at this point. Like, allowing us to have just a little taste. And then
Ben
the rest
Franklin.
Of it is just, like, not just misery. Like, we've experienced misery. That was the 99 loss season. That was, you know, 15, 16, 7, you know, 2014. Like, that's those years. This is different. This is a different type of torture, you know, as being a fan. Like, this is worse because the team has done exactly what they're supposed to do, and they're still mediocre. Not just mediocre, it's absolute, they are the middle.
Do you think that the difference could be Mickey Moniak, by any chance? The Phillies Twitter account said he's going to begin rehab assignments with single A Clearwater.
I mean, why not?
As we know, his spring training numbers were off the charts. He had a very promising preseason. And then, of course, right at the end, broke his hand, right? That's what happened? And of course, we didn't get to enjoy that fun little subplot. Really felt like, oh man, did the Phillies stumble ass backwards into a center fielder from their own farm system, no less? Is that happening? And then no, of course it wasn't going to happen.
Curse.
So how do you feel about Mickey Moniak, who this spring hit .378 with a .1351 OPS in 15 games? He had 10 extra base hits, 6 of which were home runs. He had the second highest OPS on the Phillies behind reigning NL MVP Bryce Harper. That's not nothing.
I think we
all agreed that was absolutely not nothing, especially for a guy who didn't even look like he should be playing in the major leagues, 2 years ago or so. So he's on the road to recovery, but he's also on a road recovering from something.
Continuing.
So can't say that you're going to get a .378 hitter drop him in center field once he's better and ready to join the team. You don't even know if that's in the Phillies' plans, given how they got some roster jostling to do. But what is the Mickey Moniak news that he's beginning to inch towards the Phillies again? What does that do for your morale? Do you feel like he's got the ability to be a difference maker, or do you think he's just that's just something that's some good news?
I mean, I think it's a lot of it's good news, but anything would help. Literally anything. Scott Kingery, I think, has been called up to Lehigh Valley, and that's good. He could be here. Maybe he's good still. Anyone could help with anything. Pretty much everyone they have is good at something. I actually have a decent amount of confidence that Moniak will be able to get back on track. If only because I feel like the presence and the existence of Alec Bohm is a good thing. It helps everyone. It helps the younger players see, you can suck and come back from it. Because, he didn't just suck. He sucked and then said it. He just sucked and then talked about how much he hated being there. And the city forgave him, and he's just been doing great. He's so confident out there. That alone, the confidence factor to come back and really believe, I really do think that plays something, that plays into it. And I would hope that Moniak, seeing the team is struggling without Bryce Harper and will be for a little while, maybe he's going to be laser focused. He could be laser focused and really help. Anyone could help. Anything could happen. That's the cool thing about baseball. Anyone could have a streak, a Bryce Harper, last week streak of games. Anyone could at any point. That's what I'm telling myself. This is how I'm trying to stay on the good side of things.
Well, Mickey Moniak would be awesome to see join the team again. Again, just using that terrific spring as hopefully a springboard into a successful stretch in the major leagues. But we don't know when exactly that'll be. We just know that he will, according to the Phillies, be starting to rehab with Clearwater. And, I'm not going to sit here and say that's the difference, but it always is good to just get some new blood, especially when things have grown stagnant this early in the season.
Get a pair of antler headband, antlers, and just do, everyone go to Five Below, get something stupid and bring it back and just decide we're going to incorporate this into our daily routine for the next month. Why not do that? That could be fun.
Could all wear Mickey Mouse ears when Mickey comes back.
Exactly. Everyone find a person in the stands and trade them for their hat. Doesn't matter what team it is, trade for their hat.
Oh, boy. All right. So, talking about the offense, I just want to real quick give you the stats that nobody wants to see. Your offensive leaders against the Padres were Rhys Hoskins and Johan Camargo. Reese and Johan, they were the only ones to total three hits in three games. And those are, again, your offensive leaders. In Reese's case, he had two singles and a home run. Camargo had three singles. They each had a walk as well. I'll tell you what, Roman Quinn went 0 for 6 with three strikeouts. Woof. He was woof indeed. Kyle Schwarber, still climbing out of that hole. He went 2 for 10 with six strikeouts. Just bad. Just bad stuff, folks. Everybody else, you know, Herrera, Schwarber, Castellanos, Bohm, they all had two hits. Stubbs, Stott, and Segura all had one. And so did Real Muto. That's the other thing. If you've lost Bryce Harper and Gene Segura was under the weather as well in Game 3, I believe the report was that he could have come in later in the game. I don't know if he did. I guess he, I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember if he did. But point is, he wasn't available to start and didn't play in the majority of the game. Point being, those are your best two hitters. Like those, we were so encouraged by Harper and Segura and the red hot streak they were both in, and then they were both not available. And suddenly this offense, which is supposed to be deep and not, you know, unplugged just because one or even two guys aren't available, it just was incapable. And we don't know why. We don't. And I don't, yeah, we can sit here and guess, but we all saw those games. And now they get to deal with a Dodgers team who just four games swept the Diamondbacks. Ooh. As beat writer Fabian Ardaya said, in a span of 42 hours, they won four baseball games.
Then they get one every 10 hours. That's incredible.
Then yesterday they had an off day just to collect their thoughts. And now they're headed to Philadelphia like a giant blue fist flying across the country, landing in Philadelphia tonight to dick punch a team that embarrassed them in their home stadium and has never had could not have looked more lifeless against one of their own division rivals for the last three games. Feeling good. Who's pitching tonight? I mean, does that even matter?
Maybe an off day and, you know, 90 plus degrees of heat will have done them good. Who doesn't want to play in that?
Maybe the Phillies will just be like the Dodgers Reds, the way the Reds or Pirates always beat up on the Phillies when they were good. Ranger Suarez gets the ball tonight facing Julio Urias. Great.
I hate him.
I mean, you know, I hope it goes well, but how do you even make predictions with this team? Because this is impossible. This is because I don't know who these people are. I don't know what this is. What the hell am I looking at? Like, what's consistent about this team? Nick Castellanos, you know, is that it? Zach Wheeler's looked really good. Hey, I do want to say in these three losses, the starting pitching was very good. Like these are games the Phillies lost 3-0 and 2-0.
No.
Like that's, they blew it. Like that's what I mean when I say this team can't lose those games. They got really good performances from all three starters. Nice. Kyle Gibson, Zach Wheeler, and Aaron Nola all did very well. You know, and that's an area that you are not guaranteed to have success
and
with this team.
It's incredible that it's happening now, and they're just looking the gift horse in the mouth. They're shoving their entire fist down, and it's going to eat them. Like, it's
the bullpen,
so frustrating.
Too. Yeah, bullpen. Kyle Gibson went 5 2/3. He allowed two earned runs and had seven strikeouts. And the bullpen went the rest of the way and didn't. Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched an inning. He allowed two hits. But Brad Hand, Andrew Bilotti, and Connor Brogdon didn't allow a hit. They allowed one run or one walk collectively.
I mean, and I watched Brogdon. Maybe this is how he's like. I don't think he's like this all the time. He was pitching angry yesterday.
He was.
He was angry. And it worked for him.
It worked for him.
He did great.
Look how that worked. Look at that. And you know what? Yeah, that's just what I said about the Dodgers series. They defined it by being aggressive, and it worked. You know, they didn't necessarily win very prettily in the first two games of that series where they you know, the bullpen imploded and kept giving runs back, but the offense came up and kept getting, you know, piling on more runs. And that's how they won 8-7 and 12-10. Like those were two big wins that this team is built to win. So when you get great pitching performances, it should be a walk in the park for this offense to put, you know, 5, 6, 7 runs up. That's what it's built to do.
It's supposed to do.
Yeah. The one game they won against the Padres was the one that Zach Wheeler started. He went 7 innings, unheard of in this day and age, allowed only 4 hits and 9 strikeouts, nothing else. He was dominant.
If they get, I mean, they've already been getting great Bryce Harper. It looks like we're about to get some great Zach Wheeler. If they blow this for a second fucking year, I will scream. If either of them finishes in the top 5 of any major category for hitters or pitchers, what do we even do? Like, it would be such a waste. No, for them to have one season like that is incredible. But 2 is luck that you cannot waste it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you do at that point. I think of the Arrested Development quote, and I always think of the Angels in the Outfield quote, you got to start trading them. All of them. I can't trade 25 players, George. Yeah. And then in game 1, you had Aaron Nola, who, you know, it's always, I will have trust issues with Aaron Nola for some time. We had Zach Eflin. Zach Eflin for 6 innings. He allowed 5 hits, 1 earned run, and 5 strikeouts. I mean, you know, again, another great deep start. And Joe Girardi went straight to James Norwood, author of the 8-7 meltdown loss to the Mets. And he made it a third of an inning, allowed 2 earned runs. Brad Hand and Nick Nelson went the rest of the way, and they kept things pretty clean. So again, you got a lot of good bullpen stuff. You can go ahead and just get James Norwood an Uber. You can just go ahead and, you know, get the black car, pay for extra get here quick stuff, and he can just be on his way. But yeah, we're good. I've seen enough, and Joe Girardi's just going to keep putting him out there because he's trying to make some kind of point about being a dipshit or something. I don't know. And
but
we're done. We're done.
Get on the IL. Do it.
Like, I know typically we're defining ourselves by a lack of patience, you know, a lack of reasoning, a lack of rationality at times. We're fans. Like, you know, fan is short for fanatic. There's a reason, you know, what we're here, and, you know, managers and people who work in baseball are where they are. We're going to have different reactions to things. We're going to be a little more unhinged in our responses. But I did kind of expect there to be, and maybe there still will be, because, again, it's not even Memorial Day yet, but closer to maybe not a fan's level exactly, but closer to a fan's sense of urgency in this team finding success. So when you have something like a guy in your bullpen who Joe Girardi keeps putting out there, who keeps allowing runs every time he's out there, you think, hey, you know, he could still be a great pitcher, you know, maybe in our organization somewhere else, or maybe with another organization. But, like, we don't really have the time, the patience. We certainly don't really have the goodwill saved up to keep putting guys out there who are just figuring it out while they're giving games away. This team is built to win, supposedly, in theory. Hypothetically, like this team is supposed to be competitive in a very competitive division after 3 frustrating years of not quite. Yeah, it's not the time to go over the tax yet. You gotta be careful. And now there's a pandemic. I don't have any money. Like, you gotta. It's been a frustrating 3 years. Seems like, you know, new baseball president in there. Ownership is, you know, all smarmy about, hey, I went over the tanks like I said I would. Great. We're still looking at the same result, and it's late May. You only get so many months in a baseball season. You only get so many chances to blow it and be able to recover. And again, I don't expect the Braves to be bumbling around for the rest of the year in the NL East. I kind of think you can expect the Mets to be as good as they've been all year. I mean, that's why not? Then again, switching quickly to Mets news. I'm not laughing at this. I'm laughing at what I'm going to say after this. But Max Scherzer is hit the injured list, and we're going to miss 2 months of Max Scherzer, which is very bad for that Mets rotation, which is already suffering from a lack of Jacob deGrom. What I was laughing at was the press release that the Mets put out today. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
I forgot what this was even regarding, so I just read it and was like, "What? What the hell happened?"
I can't wait.
We deeply and sincerely apologize for the disruption during the first pitch ceremony on Friday, May 13th, and any offense it caused for Japanese Ambassador Mori this week.
What?
We take full responsibility for the timing and process miscommunication and hope to have the opportunity for the ambassador and his guests to return for a future game. I was like, what the hell did the Mets do? And then I remembered, this was that thing where Max Scherzer was warming up. The guy who was going to throw out the ceremonial first pitch came out, and Max Scherzer didn't even look at it. He was like, Max Scherzer is not going to like unplug. He's starting to pitch. Like, his process has begun. He didn't get off the mound. So the guy who was supposed to throw out the ceremonial first pitch just kind of had to like walk dejectedly off the field and not throw it. Turns out that was a Japanese ambassador.
I mean, no matter what, the Mets are still the Mets. They just, the pitcher they acquired last season, who just went on the IL for 6 weeks, caused an international incident because he's so intense.
I don't, honestly, don't even blame Scherzer for that.
No!
Like, he went out there when he goes out there and he was doing his job. It's not his job to communicate when and where guests are doing and throwing things. Like, that's not on him. And it's Max Scherzer. He's reached a level of intensity by the time he's on an actual mound and pitching that you don't want to interact with him. Can you imagine if this guy had walked up to him and been like, excuse me, I'm supposed to be there. Like, come on.
As a former event planner, I can just say that whoever planned this maybe needs to be reprimanded somehow, because not only do you have to know who's pitching, you have to, I don't know why the first pitch was taking place so close to the start of the game. In most places, it doesn't.
I know. It did seem
Seems
strange.
Awful scheduling, because if the players are out there like actively doing stuff to do what they're paid to do, that's what they're paid to do. Like, then you've fucked up because you should know if you're going to do this. Like, it just smacks of like a PR person who has very little contact with the actual team and just doesn't necessarily think that they should, you know, refer them, which is just, it's so, so Mets. I can also imagine, you know, the owner interceding, being like, no, put a little closer. Let's make sure he's got like a prime spot. We don't want it to happen too early. Just screwing it up himself.
So I wanted to be sure to mention that little.
I would have completely missed it. Thank you.
into Mets land.
It's a
there.
Gift.
Yeah. But just to close the loop on my unhinged thoughts I was just spouting there. I guess I'm just expecting some more urgency from the Phillies this year. Like, there is pressure on this team. I hope they understand that pressure on this team to be good is a good thing. It means people are paying attention and they want to pay more attention. They want to buy your tickets. They want to buy your shit. Like, give them a reason to buy Phillies hats and merch and all that stuff. Give them a reason to do that, because we know everyone is waiting, and I hope that stuff like, you know, using the same guy who just isn't working in the bullpen, or just doing something, like taking some sort of action to shake this team out of a lethargic funk early in the season. I don't know what it is. I'm not an idea man. Maybe set off a bunch of fireworks in the clubhouse before every game just to keep everybody on edge and wake them up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe they need to go on a team building exercise to the Franklin Institute. Like, do something. Like, something's got to be different. We don't know enough about what goes on every day in the clubhouse to really know for sure, but we know what the results are on the field year to year, and these are scarily close to what we've seen the past few years. So something has to change, and I hope the team recognizes that, even though it is very early in the season, because it's been early in the season the last 3 years, too, and we know how all three of those seasons ended.
Yeah.
So let's change something about this process while there's still a chance to do so. You know, yeah, it's only May, and it's not Memorial Day, but this team shouldn't be fucking around. Like,
no.
They should not just be sitting there going, well, we'll see what happens. It's a long season. Yeah, it is a long season. It's been a long season of 500 baseball for 3 years in a row.
This is year four, and we're still here. And we've recorded the same podcast so many times. And it feels like we're specifically being targeted. Because we do so much podcasting, and they've been so samey. It really feels like the three of us, the four or five of us, are being specifically targeted by nature for this punishment. It's not giving us anything new.
Absolutely brutal, but hey, going into a series against the team the Phillies found very beatable on their home turf this weekend. Who knows? You never know with this team. Roll the dice, say a prayer to the god of your choosing, and the Phillies will take the field tonight, and the results will be something. Can't wait to see which type of something it is, but I'm sure it's going to be at least a little bit stupid. We're going to take a quick bit break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your favorite, two of your favorite rebuild era Phillies like we do every week on Continued Success right after this. Well, as we do every week on Continued Success, we reach one of my hands into the mason jar and pull out one of the handwritten names on these many pieces of paper, each of which contain the name of a rebuild era Philly from the years 2012 to 2021. And every week we give you a little more information about those players so that we don't have to, like, you know, go back and do 10-year retrospective on seasons that we don't give a shit about, and neither do you. So this is what we're doing instead of that. And this week, you know, we've actually had 2 weeks because we missed a week last week. But this week we're bringing you Howie Kendrick and Pedro Florimone. You're getting a little more, hopefully, than you ever knew about both of these guys. I think with Pedro, it's going to be a little easier. Howie Kendrick is like a famous baseball player. Like, he's a known entity, one of the few with a name in this jar.
I have quite a lot.
There you go. All right, tell us about Howie Kendrick.
All right. So let's meet Howie Kendrick, everybody. He was born just 13 days before I was, on July 12th, 1983, in Jacksonville, Florida. His mother was a single parent and a member of the U.S. Army, so when he was five, he and his sisters, Christina and Michelle, moved in with their grandmother. She's the one who encouraged him to pursue baseball and raised him until he was 12. That's when his mother finished her service and the four Kendricks could finally live together as a family. Unfortunately, Howie didn't get along with his mother, and a few years later, he moved in with another family. As I got older, things with my mom, we didn't get along very well, Kendrick told the Deseret News in 2007. Things happened, and I just moved in with the Cokers, this other family. There's differences now when I look back, and it's like it was adolescent things. I was hard-headed, and I wanted to think I knew everything, and she was actually right in a lot of things she was trying to tell me. I guess I was just getting older and thinking I knew everything, and we didn't mesh well. I don't blame her for anything. A lot of it was me.
Well, in hindsight, this is self-reflection. Well, and I feel like a lot of people aren't capable of this, so healthy.
This was 2007. He said this the year after he was drafted. He's 23. Maybe. I mean, the year after he made his debut. So that's I kept that in there because I felt it was an example of Howie Kendrick just being always an even-keeled guy, very honest and wise beyond his years.
Yeah, he was kind of like the McCutcheon before McCutcheon in Philadelphia.
He was,
you know, just a beloved everywhere he'd been before and after. And the Phillies just didn't have a team where what would have been a citywide appreciation of him just wasn't able to blossom because the team was just shit. Like, the team was just boring shit. Yep. And he was on it.
And like, that's the thing. He was great. Even though he missed a bunch of time, he was great. And that's why the Phillies traded him at the deadline or in the off season. They're like, we can't, why would we want a great player? and we'll see what happened after that. So Howie was drafted by the Angels, right out of high school in 2002, and he shot up through the majors. He made his debut on April, his major league debut on April 26, 2006. And while he failed to get his first hit in his first game, he got it in his second game, a line drive single off of Barry Zito, who was playing for the A's at the time.
Was this good Barry Zito, 2006?
Yeah, that was good Barry Zito. That was even pre-Giant. Pre-Giants Barry Zito was the good one.
Damn.
Yeah, anytime there's an opportunity to mention Barry Zito, I just kind of do. I don't know why. He didn't hit his first home run until July 26th off of future former Philly, Sean Camp.
Sure.
Yep.
Well, I guess his name is in the... Wait, did we do Sean Camp already? I think we did.
I think we might have.
I think we did. How about that?
We did
that?
A Sean.
Yeah. The jar's looking a little less crowded than it used. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff in here, but I'm looking at it right now, and it is definitely not as packed to the brim as it used to be.
I mean, if we want to, you know, drag this out, we could do one a week, and we could switch off.
We don't want to drag it
out.
Do
we not? We don't want to get a little bit more time out of this.
Nah. I think we'll do this, and then we'll have a whole other gag we'll come up with. So this is, Let's just get this out of the way.
So his homer off of pitcher Sean Kemp was just really the start of a career that would span 1,747 hits, 127 home runs, 15 years, four teams, three main positions, first base, second base, and left field, one All-Star game, one NLCS MVP, and one World Series. Kendrick had a moment in the spotlight on August 15th of 2006, his rookie year, when he was running to catch a foul on the first base side of Fenway Park. A very special Boston native was sitting right where the ball was headed, along with his famous actress wife. Can you guess who it is?
Was it Ben Affleck?
Yes, it was. He was sitting in the front row as a special 34th birthday surprise.
Wow, Ben Affleck, 34 years old, and not a tired, basically 50-year-old man.
4 years younger than I am now. Like that, I'm just like, wow. I remember when I felt when I was 34. How I felt when I was 34. It was actually pretty decent. He reached up to catch that ball, but Kendrick actually beat him there. Fans sitting in the area booed Kendrick, and the moment went viral.
They booed Kendrick.
They booed him
really?
for stealing the ball away from a famous Oscar-winning actor.
And I'm sorry, who was his girlfriend at the time?
His wife, Jennifer Garner.
Oh, that was...
Yes,
okay, that
now
was the
former
Garner's. Okay.
Wife.
Right. Yeah. I remember he hosted Saturday Night Live, and a bunch of stuff about them, like, you know, fighting or whatever had just come out in the press, and she showed up to do a cameo during the monologue and addressed and was just like, oh yeah, marriage is like very hard, and like that was kind of like the gist of it. They were making jokes about, oh yeah, marriage is like hard, but you gotta like work on it and stuff, and then like 2 weeks later they were done.
Yep. I'm gonna guess that's something their couple's therapist said that they should do together. Why don't you participate in this fun skit that's broadcast on national television?
I hope that she was like, I could never respect you after you let Howie Kendrick catch that baseball.
I do too.
I never looked at you the same way again.
So the moment did go viral as something could get in 2006, which was essentially People Magazine, TMZ, Access Hollywood, and poor quality videos on early, early, very early YouTube. I remember YouTube in 2000. I remember watching one of the SNL digital shorts. It must have been Lazy Sunday on YouTube for the first time.
That was a full court. Yeah, that was a blitz. That was bringing the hammer down on you virally. Those were when you checked all those boxes.
Yep.
That was it. You were done.
Yep. Everyone saw that video. People even who did not have computers. So.
I'm gonna look that up. I'm gonna see what the deal was.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So Ben appeared on Access Hollywood with Billy Bush to relive that moment, which Ben said was the closest he'll ever come to playing a Major League Baseball. But the story wasn't over yet. Kendrick recorded a special message for Ben Affleck, which was played on the broadcast.
Oh, my God.
Sorry I didn't let you grab that foul ball, but I had a job to do. But nice try, though, even for a Red Sox fan. So here you go, and congratulations on Hollywoodland. I had to keep that in because I knew you'd get a kick out of that.
Hollywoodland! Like, congrats on that movie. Did he win anything for that
movie?
No,
it was a dud. It was him, like, it was some Superman shit, I think. It was...
Yeah, he was playing the actor who played Superman.
Yes. Wow. Billy then handed Ben a multimillionaire and actor a ball signed by Howie Kendrick, an Angels player in his rookie year.
Wow.
My guess is that Ben does not have that anymore.
And what happened to Billy Bush?
I don't know or care. He actually might still be hosting Access Hollywood.
No, you know that he's not. He was the other guy on the bus during the grab him by the... Yeah.
Oh, God. So much of that I've tried to black out. Yikes.
We're so pompous here in the future talking about the past. You idiots living in the past. How do you not know what's going
to
happen?
Enjoying yourselves, having lives, acting like everything won't go to shit. How dare you? All right. So in December 2014, after 9 years with the Angels, they traded Howie Kendrick to the Dodgers. He played well for them, but a hamstring injury bothered him in the second half. At the end of the season, he declined the Dodgers' $15.8 million qualifying offer and became a free agent for the first time in his career. He figured there would be numerous teams wanting to sign him because he was a very good player. But no one called. No one. So this is a quote. Bob Nightingale in 2014 did an article about this. Some of this might blow your mind here. So nothing, Kendrick told Bob Nightingale of USA Today Sports. I figured there would be quite a few suitors for me, and nobody was really calling. Here it is, getting close to spring training, and you keep hearing the same thing over and over. Nobody wanted to give up that draft pick. It was a shocker.
A draft pick. That's what they were...
If you signed a player who had declined the qualifying offer, you lost a draft
pick.
Yep.
Right. But, like, he wasn't worth a draft pick? I get...
This was very close to the time where the market started to contract and everyone, you know, with a brain started accusing the teams of colluding.
I get, yeah.
This
I mean, this
right
is like
around
a,
it.
This is a 22, 23-year-old guy hitting like 300, 800 OPS. I mean, this is a valuable player.
He was in his
mid-20s at the beginning
of point. He was in his mid-20s,
too
bad.
This is a little further along, but still.
Still worth it. He ended up re-signing with the Dodgers for 2 years and $20 million total, barely 2 weeks before spring training started. It was less than the deal he had turned down.
You mean the Angels?
Yes. Okay. The Angels, sorry. Yeah. It was less than the... No, this was... He was traded to the Dodgers. He is now
in
the Dodgers.
Oh, if he's in the Dodgers, then he's in his 30s. And he
2014.
Is...
2014.
Okay, yeah. Then that is much. That is later in the career than I thought. Sorry.
He ended up re-signing with the Dodgers for less yearly than the qualifying offer. It was a lot of deferments and like targets for him to reach bonus money. He was only guaranteed really $5 million a year. So this is him talking again. When you get to free agency, you're supposed to be a free agent, Kendrick said. Now with this qualifying offer, teams are trying to decide, do I make my major league team better or my minor league system better? It forces teams to make a choice, and it's hurting everybody. There are a lot of good players out there who can help teams. It's such a strange market. It's not about one person, but all of us as a whole, Kendrick said. Hopefully, when the next wave of players comes up, it won't be like that. It will be completely different.
Look at that. Someone who can recognize that a system is broken. He may not be part of the group that benefits when it gets corrected, but is still under the impression that it needs to be corrected and would support and, in fact, perhaps even try to help it, you know, develop into something that'll be better for the people behind them. Crazy, crazy concepts. Yes.
So this took place before just before the 2016 season. At the end of which they MLB and the Players Association would negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement, because that's what he's essentially talking about. He's talking about fixing the collective bargaining agreement, and we all know what happened. So Nightingale spoke to four other players, including Ben Zobrist, who were all having the same issue at this time. And I'm going to read you some of what he wrote. This is not too, too long ago.
Ah, shit.
No. The trouble, too, is the increasing number of teams not even trying to win. Everyone watched how the Houston Astros lost 324 games in 3 years, and the Chicago Cubs finished fifth in the NL Central five consecutive years. Both clubs hoarded draft picks for years and both returned to the playoffs in 2015. The fewer teams trying to win, the fewer options for free agents. Now listen to this. The free agent system needs to be overhauled in the next CBA. If you don't eliminate the qualifying offer, at least make it tougher for teams to decide whether to extend them. Just 3 of 54 eligible players have accepted the qualifying offer since the provision was implemented in the CBA 4 years ago. Make the qualifying offer a 2-year guarantee or at least provide a player option for the second year. Establish a minimum standard in which qualifying offers can be attached to only truly elite free agents. Stop rewarding teams for losing free agents, particularly those that have no interest in bringing back their player. Better yet, it's time to try a novel concept. How about when a player becomes eligible for free agency, he's actually free?
Damn, Bob. I know. You think he even remembers writing that? Good Lord.
I read through this article, which was long. Like, this is Bob Nightingale giving a shit. He's still flubbed some tweets. That's a perennial thing. But he was on the ball here. And this was before the 2016 CBA, in which none of this got done.
Jesus Christ. Wow. Yeah, that's nuts. Yep. That's nuts that, I haven't read something written by Bob that sounded like that in a long time.
Yeah. Yep. So I had to read that. I don't, paying tribute to Bob Nightingale, but paying tribute to the Bob Nightingale that was, I think, is worth it when you stumble upon something like that, because I don't necessarily think any of those are, ideas that you would reject out of hand. Those are all pretty decent. Like, using his brain.
No, it sounds like somebody who follows baseball and writes about baseball professionally and developed an opinion based on the information available to him and the personal experience he's had, just kind of looking around and seeing things and looking at the market the way it was and just developing through deduction and reasoned conclusions something that was worth putting out there and having people react to. Incredible. Incredible from Bob Nightingale.
Yep, I had to do that. So, of course, we're in the future, and we know that the NLDPA mostly punted on the 2016 CBA. MLB teams used that to allegedly collude and contract the market, and now we're here. 2016 was Kendrick's worst year in the majors. He didn't get much work at second base with some guy named Chase Utley. I'm saying that right? Utley?
I believe you are, yes.
Mm-hmm. Taking most of the playing time. He played most.
I think it's pronounced Butley. Butley. Yes.
He played mostly in left field and third base, hit .255, and had the highest ground ball percentage in the majors, 61%, and the lowest fly ball percentage at 19.6. Mm. He was at the top and bottom. That was pretty something. That was something.
Yeah, that's a rebuild era Philly, if I've ever heard one.
After that season, Kendrick was traded to the Phillies in exchange for Darren Ruff and Darnell Sweeney.
Oh, that's how we did
that. Yeah, that's how we got rid of Ruff.
That's where Darren Ruff went. I see.
He went on the DIL with an abdominal strain on April 18th and didn't return until May 29th. He played pretty consistently, amassing a .340, .397, .454 triple slash until July 28th. He played a total of 39 games. When the Phillies traded him and cash considerations to the Nationals for Mackenzie Mills and international bonus money.
Yay!
I have in brackets.
I love international bonus money. He's my favorite player.
I have in brackets your interlude to talk about how stupid the fucking Phillies were at this point.
Yes. No, it's always good to have another guy who is, on his baseball reference page, Phillies appears once between long stretches with other teams where he finds massive success and general belovedness from the local populace. Obviously, the Angels. And then the Nationals, once he left the Phillies, I know Nationals fans loved having him there, and he wound up being a huge key player with their World Series team. Yep. Right? Yeah. Yep. Yep. Sure was. Left the Phillies, and won a World Series. And I don't even subscribe to the general idea that everyone who leaves here is a world beater, but at the same time, when it happens, it's just so easy to feel like it always happens, especially with these older, established guys. Like, if it's a lottery ticket and the Phillies are just getting a guy to get a guy and seeing if they can turn him around, they're not good at that. You don't expect that to work out. But an already established player, which, again, very few of those I feel like are even in this mason jar for us to pull out and talk about, the way Howie Kendrick was an established major leaguer by the time he got to Philadelphia. And it just kind of, like, you know, he didn't suck, but, like, it didn't, you know, he wasn't, they were, oh, this is gonna, he was like the extra piece on a team that was basically all the way there, and then wound up making some key hits for them in the postseason for Washington. I mean, like, that's sucks. Yeah. Like, that's just a sub brand of the type of guys we're talking about in this segment.
If you don't mind, I have a few more tidbits about Kendrick after he left the Phillies. Just 2 weeks after arriving in Washington, he hit a walk-off grand slam, his first grand slam ever, and he his second one in 2019, which was pretty special. It was in the 10th inning of an extra innings game against the Dodgers in the NLDS, making him just the second in the second player in history to hit an extra innings grand slam in the postseason. That is the grand slam that advanced the Nationals to the NLCS.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking of. I remember writing about Howie Kendrick on FanGraphs because he was just, you know, all the Nationals fans were falling in love with him because he was just coming up with these key hits. Yeah. And he was just a guy brought in to be, you know, a veteran bench player to play the positions he played. And, you know, that's a key part of all World Series teams. And, you know, putting him on a team like the Phillies at that point was just like, you know, maybe we can trade him. And then clearly they did, but still, yeah, that he works out so much better for a team like the Nationals, which were like, we're ready to go. Who else is coming with us?
He was literally the player that helped them win the World Series. It was his addition that did it, because you could see it. The Nationals swept the Cards in the NLCS on the back of Kendrick going 5-for-15 with 4 doubles, 4 RBI, which earned him the NLCS MVP. In Game 7 of the World Series, he hit a go-ahead home run against the Astros that cemented their win and led to a big inning, I believe, with additional runs. But without that, they would not have won. He also won the 2019 Heart and Hustle Award. He played 25 games in 2020, which was shortened by the pandemic, and then he retired in December of 2020. A year later, the Phillies hired him as special assistant to GM Sam Fold, just a year later, and that's where he remains today.
Yeah, that makes sense. Philly's jumping in way after the fact. Hey, do you want to come work for us in the front office? But no, I forgot about that. And just a good guy to have around, regardless of what
like,
he's doing.
I hate talking about the Nationals, but like he really was the player that led them there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Phillies.
Thanks, Phillies. All right, well, let's talk a little Pedro Florimone. I can fly through this because, honestly, you know, it's Pedro Florimone. He was signed in 2005 by the Royals, I believe. Signed by the Royals as a non-drafted free agent. Hit .351 and slugged .442 in 22 games in the rookie league. I'm sorry, by the Orioles. By the Orioles. In 2005, he got bumped up to the Aberdeen Ironbirds, and in one game in September 2006, he had 3 hits, including the go-ahead 2-run single that gave his team the lead after being down 7-1. And by February 2007, the Orioles were saying Florimone had major league potential. Ooh. The next month, Maryland newspapers were saying there were high expectations for Florimone, quote, who may be the best hitter the Orioles have signed from the Caribbean in some time. He rose up to single-A Delmarva, where he once made 3 errors in one game. He committed a career high in errors with 36 with that team.
Wow, that is a lot of errors.
So the defense kind of fell apart there. He made some mistakes that manager Gary Kendall called boneheaded that year, too, trying to advance from second to third on a ground ball to the shortstop. We all know how that typically ends. He was part of a rare offensive explosion for the 2017 Phillies, hitting an RBI double, his first extra base hit for the Phillies, on August 19th. in an inning much more remembered for Ty Kelly hitting a grand slam.
Oh, yeah.
The Phillies went up 11-4 and would hang on to win despite the bullpen allowing the Giants to score five times in the ninth inning on five singles, a passed ball, and a triple by someone named Ryder Jones.
Who? I've never heard of him.
Remember, let's see if you've heard of this guy. Remember in December 2011 when the Orioles' Luke Scott said Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States?
Oh, my God. Yes.
And he claimed he didn't get any negative feedback for it, except for on TV, and all the negative feedback the Orioles got instead of him, and how they had him sign a letter saying his beliefs didn't reflect theirs. Because of how negative the reaction was. And then he came back in the spring, a much more muted version of himself, which he claimed was because now it was baseball season and not the off season. So he was just focusing on that instead of his political beliefs, which weren't really political beliefs, but objectively incorrect statements. Well, anyway, one of the very interesting things about Luke Scott that came out was that he was friends with his Latin teammates, spoke fluent Spanish, took Felix Paye and Pedro Florimón, as well as what was called an unnamed female ESPN reporter.
Oh, God.
To go shooting at a shooting range. When I signed, I always lived with the Latins, Scott said in the Baltimore Sun.
I don't care. When you say the something, that is, that's, no, like, it's very bad. Like, it's
come on,
the
man.
Latins. What are you...
Pedro Florimón joined him for a trip to the shooting range. Sounds like fun. It sounds like Luke Scott in his natural element, I would say. Hey, you ever been to a shooting range?
No, I actually would kind of love to go.
Oh, it's fun. It is. The first like one or two times I went, I involuntarily twitched and jumped every time there was a shot fired, which I was like, wow. It's not even like I'm in control of it. I'm just doing it. But yeah, the last time I went was a couple of weeks ago as part of a bachelor party in Philadelphia at that place across a place on Spring Garden that it's, you know, it says Pistol Range, I think. And I'd passed it so many times and then finally went inside. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I'm an okay shot.
I would probably be
not
terrible.
Great.
I've never shot a gun in my life, but I would certainly love to.
It's very easy to be terrible. I remember once I went skeet shooting and they threw the, you know, the clay disc up and I had a shotgun and I hit it. I like winged it with my first shot. And I was like, hot damn, didn't hit one the rest of the time we were there.
That's
hubris. Well, in 2013, Pedro Florimón was a part of the terrifying Dominican Republic squad at the World Baseball Classic and was the starting shortstop for the Twins that year, which was his longest fullest season in the major leagues, in which he played in 134 games, hit .221, and had a .611 OPS. The Twins won 66 games, which is about what you'd expect for a team that made Pedro Florimón its starting shortstop. He spent another year in Minnesota, then journeyed to the Pittsburgh organization, saw very limited action in the majors for 2 years until the winter of 2016. He could hit a fastball, but not much else. And he was able to steal a base when needed. He came to the Phillies as a free agent in the winter of 2016, hit .348 in 49 plate appearances, and broke his ankle, rounding first on September 2nd. He came back in 2018, but only in April, May, and then September. So that's not the mark of a promising contributor. Nope. But he hit .225 with a .699 OPS. Here's a little interesting tidbit. On May 17th and 18th, 2017, against the Cardinals, Pedro Florimón hit home runs on back-to-back days, both of which came with something of a historical footnote. They were his only two home runs of the season and of his Phillies career.
Wow.
And they came on back-to-back days. So, yeah, I don't know. For like a 48-hour period, Pedro Florimón just was, you know, looking at a beach ball out there. Really, he hadn't hit a home run in the major league since 2013 either. He hit 9 home runs in that full season with the Twins, but had not hit one at the major league level since then. So it'd been 5 years since he felt that sweet, sweet connection of barrel meeting ball.
That's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, and he did it 2 days in a row. His first home run on May 17th was the first one, like I said, he'd hit since September 2013. And because the Phillies were so dumb and bad, he also pitched for them in that game.
Oh, I remember this.
getting all three outs in the eighth inning of a 12-4 loss. In one of those games where he homered, he was the Phillies' first relief pitcher, said Matt Breen, to hit a home run since 1995. Pedro Florimone's 2018 season would end once again with injury when he broke his foot by fouling a pitch off it. So, two abbreviated seasons where he briefly brushed against history while with the Phillies. He signed with a Mexican League team for the 2022 season and was hitting .292 and serving as a leadoff hitter when they cut him on May 10th.
Aww.
Less than just 10 days ago.
That feels weird.
Yeah, I tried to see like why. All I could find was stories about like, hey, like this guy's doing pretty well, you know, like stories about him in the Mexican League this year. And they're like, yeah, he's doing pretty well and he's been hitting leadoff. I didn't see anything about like he violated a team policy or something, but that's kind of like the vibes coming off of that because he was doing very well and suddenly they just got
rid
of him.
Cut a player like that if you're forced to.
I should also say, in 2019, on opening day with the Braves, he hit a walk-off grand slam to start the season for them.
Oh.
As well. I also found a tweet of a Phillies lineup being put out there on September 2nd, 2018. It had Roman Quinn leading off. It had Jose Bautista hitting third. Carlos Santana cleaning up. Asdrubal Cabrera in the five hole. Scott Kingery at 6, Pedro Florimone at 7, Jorge Alfaro at 8, and John Stolness's response was, Pedro Florimone? Seriously? Why not put Kingery at 2nd and have Crawford up here to play short? And you can just put that tweet in some tissue paper and save it in a time capsule.
Jesus Christ. Holy shit.
Fun stuff. But yeah, That's what I was able to dig up on Pedro Florimone. And, before we go, this end of the episode, I'm going to pull two more names out of the mason jar. Let's see who we're going to talk about in our next episode. We got Casey Fien. Fine? Fien? Casey Fien? I don't know who that is. And Garrett Clevenger. Is he... He's still playing, right?
That's Mike Clevenger.
Like with the Dodgers? But I feel like... Okay, yeah, it is. They spell their names different ways. I'm going to look it up. I think Garrett Clevenger... I feel like I just saw him playing in a game.
You might have. I just assumed if it was Clevenger, it was a mix-up you know.
Oh, this is a young man. He's 28 years old. He played for the Phillies in 2020, and he's playing for the Dodgers now. So, clearly the Phillies... Oh, yeah, check this out. Spoiler alert. For the Phillies in 2020, he played in one game, pitched 2/3 of an inning, and left the Phillies, remember it's 2020, with a 13.50 ERA after facing four batters. The next year, he played for the Dodgers and had an ERA of 3 in 22 games. So, I know I said I don't subscribe to that narrative, but... I think I'm starting to.
Cursed. I told you.
Hate it. Well, hey, you know, something to mention as we close up shop here. In response to that, teams with the highest payrolls, but also the most number of being in games where they were held to one run or less this year. RO, the Good Fight Twitter account, did reply with another more encouraging stat, or at least kind of explanatory stat. They also... are among the top teams in scoring 8 or more runs. Like almost as often as they score one or fewer, they scored 8 or more. So 9. They've done that 9 times. And they've scored one or fewer 10 times. So I guess that's not necessarily encouraging. It's just kind of confirming the frustrations we opened the episode with, which is this team is inexplicably unable to be better or worse than very bad or very good.
Yes.
Like it's either one of those two. And hey, sometimes they score 7 runs and lose because of the bullpen.
Scoring all those runs and then be, you know, one run or fewer. Like those are polar opposites. That is why the Phillies continue to be right down the middle. They're just like a negative image of each other. Wow.
Alex Coffey, who's covering the Phillies for the Inquirer, for the first year, right now, it's just been a lot of fun to watch her reactions to things.
Yes, she's wonderful.
Because she just doesn't understand what she's looking at.
I mean, who could blame... I feel like... There's so many of the beat writers, there's people who've been fans for a long time who've watched the Phillies for a long time. People that we know from our, you know, larger Phillies community. And I wonder what Matt Gelb thought when he first started watching the Phillies doing that, because now he's a changed man. Like, you look at his writing way back then and you look at it now, it's like someone has stolen his soul. And it's the Phillies.
I don't even remember what he was talking about, but one of my favorite Matt Gelb tweets is on April 28th, 2021, where he tweeted, "This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen." I don't even know what he was talking about, but clearly that was a milestone moment.
It was, like, yeah, I just...
Oh, this was actually, I don't think this was the Phillies' fault. That was the Henesy Cabrera kept hitting key Phillies players when they were playing the Cardinals. That was that. Okay, never mind. All right. Well, hey, let's end this episode. We've already gone insanely long. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. And as always, head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hitandseason. For $5, you get access to bonus content like Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones, as well as whatever else content we put up there over a month's time. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.